60s. I am 60. The 29th of April, 2013, to the 28th of April, 2014. Over. A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, by Miv. As the chill wind of late spring whipped into my face, I pondered the reason for spending my 60th birthday lugging old musical equipment into a tiny pub in the back streets of Sheffield. Where had I gone wrong? Or maybe right? The plan had formed in the winter months as the darkness had me ruminating on mortality. How could I mark the turning of the years at 60? Not as full of potential as 30, depressing as 40, resigned as 50. My diamond anniversary. I could return to my roots, rediscover my love of travelling the country in an old van, playing gigs to punters who didn't know or care who I was. 60 shows in total and averaging just over one a week seemed achievable. A subtle twist meant I would play Neil Diamond covers only. I wanted to forget my back catalogue as much as I wanted to forget that part of my life some days. Nostalgia hijacked me and took me for a ride. It sounded romantic to wander the highways and byways of our island with the wind riffling my receding hairline through the manually wound window of the old Ford Transit I had picked up for a non-cover song. The plan was to meet with old friends, make reconnections, and stay on their sofas. When possible and close enough, I would return home for a recharge, restock, and re-evaluate the plan. If neither option was available, I could always sleep in the van. I would live as a bygone version of myself with the advantage of accumulated wisdom and the drawback of dodgy knees. The gigs I enjoyed. It was a joy to visit establishments where people are truly themselves, dimly lit pubs, working men's halls, a village fete, and one memorable occasion, a children's party. The life lesson learned that day was that if you return a favour, don't involve kids. I think they would have preferred a magician or Peppa Pig. Anything but a jaded old man singing songs from olden times. I was half-travelling DJ and half-karaoke king. All I lacked was a smoke machine. My disco lights transported the masses back to another decade. The songs never failed to elicit the right response. Who could resist Sweet Caroline at the end of a drunken evening in a badly lit bar with the smell of sweat, perfume and alcopops swirling in the air, mingling with the promise of a homeward bound kebab? As summer rolled onwards, the project reached its zenith. The weather was good. The travelling was a chance to rekindle my relationships with both old music on my battered MP3 player in the battered van and with battered old friends. I called up lapsed musicians to give the old songs a new bone, get back out under the lights for one last hurrah. Most leapt at the opportunity to sing or roadie at my gig in their town. I could offer nothing more than the reflected glory from the undersized glitter ball hanging from my microphone stand. They could offer nothing more than company and a place to rest my head. There were nights where, rather than escape into the night after the music died away, I would instead drink pints with landlords into the early hours, as they would regale me with tales of how my former musical life had somehow intertwined with their own, and how in some mystic, meaningful way my musical history was part of their personal history too. But as the clock wound on and the summer expired, a fatal flaw emerged in my plans. I had rushed in with boundless enthusiasm and used up my circle of friends and renewed acquaintances far too early. I was running out of places to stay, and I was less than halfway through my 60 gigs. My enthusiasm for playing new venues hadn't dimmed. Remarkably, nor had my plunge into the discography of Neil Diamond, although I quickly learned that it was important to not get too avant-garde with my song selections, especially early in the night. There was no gig that couldn't be rescued with Sweet Caroline, though. The Saviour, as I came to think of it, could be played up to three times a night, depending on the alcohol content of the crowd. People never tired of it. I don't think they ever will. But as the punters lapped it up, the number of available beds fell, and the long hours driving a clapped-out van on yet another motorway wore me down. It may be Great Britain to some, but not when only viewed from the Mobius tarmac of the network. I was having to sleep in the van more and more often. It was getting harder to find gigs anywhere near home now. In fact, I was having to trade on my old notoriety to get gigs at all. I was heading to places I didn't want to be. The nadir was reached deep into the winter in a car park of a pub skulking on the outskirts of Darlington. Christmas was approaching. An riotously inebriated crowd had danced on the tables and waved their hands in the air while bellowing along words they only half knew. But you can't transfer that warmth of a night out into the back of a freezing cold transit van. The generosity of spirit doesn't heat your toes. It's no solace to know that people had a great time earlier and are now tucked up in their beds while your nuts freeze in a thin and stained sleeping bag wedged between two speakers. The romance was over. I didn't reach 60 gigs at the age of 60. I fell short and landed on 38, which, thinking about it, should have been the age I last tried a stunt like that. I gave it a shot. Old dogs can relearn old tricks, even if they can't sustain them. No regrets, bar one. Julian didn't return my call.
Under Two Empty Pages by Smiley.
A Troubled Dream. The Bulletin Board by Bettina Hike. This dream has been following me for many years. It always begins with me down at a steep stairway. I climb the stairs and I find myself in a corridor. I go along and finally stand in front of a door with the inscription TWO. It makes me feel uncomfortable somehow, and I don't dare to step into this room. I open another door instead and go in. I am in a small office room now with an untidy desk in one corner. While looking around, I hear some noise from the corridor. I'm so afraid someone could find me here that I crouch myself under the desk to hide away. After cowering there for a while, I notice a cable coming through a hole in the wall. I begin to pull on it, and after a brief resistance, I can pull it out entirely. The hole is big enough to look through, and so I do. There is a wall directly in front of the hole. It has incoherent words and printed text on it. Nothing can be seen of the room beyond, but I know that it must be the room with TWO inscription. I focus on the chaos of words, and I read them over and over again. Something tells me that I must remember them. But then I become aware that there are people in the room on the other side of the hole. A woman and a man are talking. I can hear them clearly. The man says,
"You're in a very good mood today."
Yes, I had already a very good idea.
An idea like the last one you told me about. You know I didn't understand it.
I know, but when I told it to her, she said it was a wonderful idea.
Yeah, but she's a very good actress too.
The woman laughs out loud, but her next spoken words scare me deeply. Where is the cable?
Which cable?
The internet cable for your office. It's gone! Knowing that next the two of them will enter the office I am in, I jump up, tear open the door and run towards the stairway. But already, at the first stairs, I stumble and fall. This is where the dream usually ends. But when I recently had this dream, I just thought I was awake but kept dreaming. I stood up and took my iPhone. There was an email by a woman I know. She wrote, "I know you will never ask me what the last sentence is I had in mind for you. A pity if you ask me." I nodded a bit self-satisfied and thought that she is right with that assumption. But some paragraphs later, she wrote, "I found a new usage for your sentence, but it is now cut into pieces and hidden next to a printed version of Workmates on the backside of the bulletin board in mine and Sina's office." Although I had laid out some hints that there is something to find on the board's backside, nobody did so far. Without turning around the board, Thorsten could read the text if only he would look through. And by finishing this sentence, I winced. The hole in the wall where the internet cable comes through, as his connection, is in our office, and the board stands where it is to cover the hole. But of course, he will never do. I was stunned. I went to the shelf to pick up a certain notebook, and I became more and more confused when I found it next to a book I didn't know I owned or does even exist, with the astonishing title, "The Bulletin Board, 27 Rather Short Stories from the Workmate's Office." What was going on? I took the notebook out of the shelf. Under the date, I had the dream with the cable for the first time. I found what I was looking for. No matter how hard I tried, I could never recall the words I have read so feverishly while crouched under the desk. But the first time I dreamed it, I could remember at least the two names among the words. They were written down under the date May 17, 1976. Then I grabbed my iPhone and wrote the woman back, telling her that she has won, that I want to know the sentence she had in mind for me. I asked her what the letters TWO stand for, because I was sure she knew. And after sending the email, I entered into Google, "Alice and Bob." But before I could have read an article with an auspicious headline, or the woman could have answered my email to clear this all up, I fully awoke. I picked up the notebook lying next to my bed. I had to write down something that was in the headline of the article Google had suggested in my dream. Under the date, October 12th, 2022, is written, "No causal order."